We're back to the Neil Haley Show. And you know what I just always enjoy doing is interviewing authors. And with just amazing backgrounds in my years of 12 plus years doing this and interviewing, I've lost track of how many interviews. But my guest today, another one that I'm going to be really interested in talking with. So I'm excited to welcome her, Ron San Miguel, author of Modern Day Mystic, Journey of a Songcatcher. How are you, Ron? Thanks for stopping by.
I'm doing very well. Thank you for the invitation. I'm doing pretty good considering a week ago today they yanked out my wisdom teeth, so I'm no longer wise.
So that's painful, and then did you take time to get everything together? No doubt about it. Let's just delve into what is songcatcher?
That's Native American for songwriter. I grew up calling myself a singer-songwriter until an elder told me, "Ron, we don't call you a songwriter, we call you a song catcher." And I said, "Well, that's perfect, because people ask me over the years how I write songs. And I seek silence and solitude and listen, and I capture what I hear and share it. So that fits perfectly, so song catcher."
Oh, that's great, because again, you hear, it comes to you then, right?
Yes.
The music comes to you in that journey. So, you know, coming up with the Modern Day Mystics, it's all about your writing and different things like that. Did you always want to be a songwriter?
No, actually, I didn't get into music until, let's see, my mom was a singer and her brothers were musicians. So there's music in the blood. But I didn't always want to get into music. I was always inspired by it. But it wasn't until I was in high school that I bought my first guitar.
Oh, wow. So high school, bought your first guitar. And then what was the journey of music after getting your guitar?
I started in folk mass, singing with the choir, with my brothers and other high school students. And over time, started with singing with a couple of twin sisters, Lori and Linda Hutchison, who, when I went to college, they went off to sing and tour the world with Up With People. And since they were the main vocalists for the group, after they left, I had to start singing more. So I started writing songs and singing my own stuff. And from there, involved with my community work, I did a lot of radio and TV shows, but never recorded until 2013.
That amount of time it took you to record, did you really have to have the songs in you to finally record? Like, you wrote stuff, but you just say, "Finally, I'm going to record this music."
Yeah, I have friends, really super good musicians. I always made a point to surround myself with musicians that were better than me. That way it made me sound better. But yes, the material that I've recorded on my albums are all original songs. And even when I do cover songs, I like to say that I do them over and over again until I make the songs my own. Otherwise, you know, if it doesn't sound as good as the original, then what's the point? So yes, I have to have the songs in me in order to share them.
And once you have those songs in you, it's time to share. But during this time, you've been involved in a lot of things in your autobiography. Can you touch upon a couple interesting stories without giving away the autobiography that you dealt with in your life to write this, being a modern day mystic?
Well, people ask me often why I wrote the book. Some have asked me if it's a spiritual guide, and I said, no, it's not a spiritual manual. It's beyond me to think I'm going to tell people how to live their lives. Rather, it's my autobiography, but it's not really about me. I share stories about my life, and my hope is to inspire the reader to reflect upon their own lives. And I believe we all have talents that are meant to be shared to make the world a better place. And the impetus initially to sit down and write was my sons. They grew up thinking their daddy was boring, so I figured it was time to set the record straight.
And you also were involved in, this is really interesting, in the civil rights movement. Explain that. So that really has to do with being in songwriting as well, right? Being influenced by those things.
Yes. John R. Lewis, a congressman, quoted after the he was there at the screening at the Kennedy Center for the movie Selma. And afterward, he was interviewed, and he said, and I quoted in the book, something on the lines that the 60s, the civil rights movement, without the music, would have been like a bird without wings. The music brought us together. And he said, we need the arts now more than ever. That was 2017 when he said that. But anyway, my introduction to the civil rights movement was in high school also, Wheatland High School. It was a military base nearby, Beale Air Force Base. So most of us students were from the Air Force Base. Small town, big bruiser football players from the country, the farmers. And there was a lot of friction between the white students and the African-American students. And it got pretty intense sometime. And it's funny because now talking with classmates all these years later, the girls didn't seem to be aware of all this friction. Us guys did, you know. But anyway, there was a lot of friction, and I spoke up and wrote a letter to the editor for our school newspaper. Next thing I know, people are talking to me like I'm the spokesperson for the black students and the brown students. There weren't a whole lot of us, so we didn't go around rioting, of course. And the point wasn't to riot anyway. The point was to speak up for civil rights.
Wow. And you definitely spoke up for civil rights in that way. And what did you learn from this movement and where it's today in this process?
Well, it heavily influenced me, especially the life of Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King, of course. Cesar Chavez, I actually got to meet him when I was in college. And later when I was in the seminary, I got to sit and have lunch with him. Very inspired by these folks. I'm a warrior of peace. My blood is Native American from northern Mexico, and my dad was Apache. My mom's side is a Yaqui Indian. But I didn't know I was Yaqui until I was 23 when my maternal grandmother sat down and told me. But anyway, the influence there of the civil rights movement has carried on with me all these years in community work, activism, and then ultimately civil service. I've been with the city of Oakland for a number of years now, working on labor, fair labor practices, things like that. Very much a part of my life still.
Definitely seems like it, for sure. And one of the interesting stories is you wanted to be a priest at one point in time. That didn't happen. You're talking about your kids and stuff. So tell us, so you really have the spiritual side to you, yet you felt that the spirit was calling you to another thing, not the priesthood, but you had the mind thought of being the priesthood at one point.
Yeah, the idea of priesthood was with me since I was a little kid. And then middle school, I discovered girls and said, oh, so priesthood got put on the back burner, and the focus became study to become a lawyer. I didn't want to practice law, but my counselor told me that the stepping stones to get involved in politics would be get your BA, go to law school, and then getting involved in politics. So that was the game plan until my junior year of college. And then I got into civil rights work, more so in community. And then over the years, I'd had different spiritual experiences growing up, and I didn't understand what was going on. So I tried talking to my parents about it. Maybe they could help me understand. My dad told me, son, there's a fine line between being a genius and being insane. And I laughed. I said, but dad, I'm neither. I'm just trying to understand these experiences of a mystical nature, alternative states of consciousness. Yeah. I had no idea what was going on. I didn't do drugs, didn't smoke, didn't drink. I didn't know what was going on until my maternal grandmother sat with me when I was 23 and explained to me that my blood is Yaqui, and what the experiences I was having are part of the spiritual tradition of our ancestors. I go, oh, I was blown away. I had no idea. Wow. So I eventually got back to the idea of studying for priesthood. I was influenced by Bishop Francis Quinn of Sacramento, and also our pastor at the time was Father Gerard Shawns, Monsignor Gerard Shawns. So I entered seminary at the age 29. Yeah.
Wow.
So
And
if they
then,
eventually, pardon?
so entering at 29, wow. And so in that process of that, when you were in the seminary, what did you learn and what made you move on to something else, not being priesthood?
Well, eventually they decided I was too outspoken and disobedient, so they kicked me out.
Oh.
I felt like my vocation was stolen. But over time, I realized, oh, okay, that wasn't my vocation. So onward and upward. Seminary was pretty interesting. I write extensively about it in my book, my time in seminary here in the States, and then the bishop sent me to study in Mexico, and I was on cloud nine. They sent me to study in Mexico because where I was in the seminary down there, they were very much into liberation theology, which fit right in with the activism and the community work I had been doing for years. But again, the Diocese of Sacramento decided I was too outspoken, so I guess I should have kept my mouth shut until after I was ordained.
And you're gonna do what you need to do. I understand. It is what it is. But it's an experience. You learn from this. And this whole, it seems like your autobiography really tells a story of journey, that journey throughout this process to where you are today. And what do you hope that readers get the most out of this? And who do you feel will benefit the most from reading your autobiography?
I was targeting the audience of like 40 and up, but I'm finding young people are really liking the book. And one of the coaches that helped me write my book, because I had no idea how to publish a book, so I took some classes. And one of the things that came out, I found, wow, she asked me, "Would you have benefited by reading this book when you were 15?" I said, "Oh yes, hands down, of course." I had no idea what all this was about when I was 15. And but at the same time, as I said earlier, it's not a spiritual guidebook. It's experiences that I've had in life that hopefully will inspire others to reflect upon their own lives.
Well, I think that just reading your book and reading your story, you have so many amazing stories. Each one of them could be a long conversation, especially that you would go detail about the seminary, to your activism, to your songwriting, and to where you are today. And that's amazing. Where can people check you out? Best place.
My book can be found anywhere you buy books. You do online with Amazon, Barnes and Noble, even your favorite bookstore. You can order it through them. My music also can be found on Amazon and iTunes, CDBaby.com. And then my website is ronsanmiguelauthor.com. And my email is ron@ronsanmiguelauthor.com.
Ron, we appreciate you coming on. You have a great story to share, and people want to leave something, say, you lived an amazing life in different ways and learn through this journey of life to where you are today. And people need to know that it's about the journey. It's not about where you start. It's the journey to where you get to today and what you learn from today. So I appreciate you coming by.
Thank you. Exactly. It's never a dull moment.
Never. You're listening and watching The Neil Haley Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.